Cale Clark here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Relevant Radio and get a free phone. Don't delay. CharityMobile.com. That's CharityMobile.com.
Fascinating facts, candid conversations, and some levity to lighten your day. This is the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
A terrific Tuesday to you. I had to check the calendar and see what day it was. I don't even know most of the time. It is Tuesday. It is October the 4th. It's the feast day of St. Francis of Assisi. And I'm going to tell you something. You need to get the tissue box ready because I have a story that I got to tell you. I can barely tell the story without getting choked up. So the same might happen to you. So that's coming up in just a second. Let me give out the phone number, 888-914-9149. That is the number for you to call me right now on the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio, 888-914-9149. You can also email the show. It's a perfect way to send me show ideas, questions that you'd like us to have answered on the air. Cale, C-A-L-E is the address, cale@relevantradio.com. And you can follow me on Twitter at Cale Clark, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E. We have so much to talk about. The Feast of St. Francis of Assisi. I got to tell you, I think, I could be wrong. There are lots of great candidates and characters for this title in church history, but I would have to say that I think he is the most unique saint in the history of the church. I think he was just so radical in his Christ-likeness, in his time, in his culture, really for any time, for any place. I think he's the most unique saint in the history of the church. We're going to talk about him in just a moment, but the gospel reading for today was the famous account of Martha and Mary. And this actually does play into the Feast of St. Francis of Assisi and what St. Francis was really all about. And we'll get into that. But I want to just read this very, very quickly to you. It's a short gospel for today from Luke chapter 10. It says, Jesus entered a village where a woman whose name was Martha welcomed him. She had a sister named Mary who sat beside the Lord at his feet, listening to him speak. Martha, burdened with much serving, came to him and said, Lord, do you not care that my sister has left me by myself to do the serving? Tell her to help me. Can you imagine saying that to Jesus? Lord, do you not care that my sister has left me by myself to do the serving? Tell her to help me. The Lord said to her in reply, Martha, Martha, you are anxious and worried about many things. There is need of only one thing. Mary has chosen the better part, and it will not be taken from her. And as somebody, let me tell you, that's the gospel for today. And as somebody who struggles with anxiety a lot and perfectionism and scrupulosity, I've talked about that on the show before. Maybe you do too. You know, I need to hear those words too. I really do. I really do. And whenever I read this gospel, I always think of the best sermon, the best homily that I've ever heard. It really stayed with me. And I'm going to share a little bit of this with you because I was able to track down the transcript of this thing. And I'm going to steal some of it. I'm absolutely going to steal some of it. And you know what? That's okay. That's totally okay because this is what preachers do all the time. Now, I'm giving credit where credit is due, by the way. I'm going to tell you who this belongs to. In fact, it belongs to a guy named Haddon Robinson. H-A-D-D-O-N. Haddon Robinson. Now, he died. He was a very famous Protestant preacher. And during my time when I was away from the Catholic Church, as you know, I went to a Protestant seminary, was a Protestant pastor for some years, came back into the Catholic Church. When I was in the Protestant seminary, when we were taking preaching classes, we used this guy's textbook as our preaching textbook because he was so good. And he wrote this famous textbook, and it was called Biblical Preaching. And it's still used in seminaries all over the world. And his basic idea, his big idea about preaching was exactly that. That there has to be a big idea, that every sermon that you hear in church, every homily that you hear, it has to be about one thing. Now, there can be some sort of supporting things around the side of it, but like I guess you could say, spokes coming out of the hub of a wheel. The sermon, the homily, should really be about one thing. And you could take this to any talk or any presentation that you have to give. It should be about one thing, one big idea. So if somebody was coming out of Mass, let's say, if you were to ask the average parishioner, what was the homily about? They should be able to tell you, oh, it was about this. Because if they can't tell you, I don't know what it was about. Maybe they were sleeping, or maybe the preacher just didn't get it across right. So that was what his book was all about. Now, some might disagree with his methodology, but it was really funny because the first page, like sort of I think it's like right after the dedication page in his book, there's a little poem. And I wish I had it. I couldn't find it. It's probably somewhere in a box somewhere in my library. But there's a little poem about how preachers always steal each other's material. They always steal each other's sermons. They always steal each other's stories. They always steal each other's jokes. It happens all the time, folks. It even happens in Catholic radio. It's an open secret. But hey, it's good material. It's good material. And credit where credit is due. I have to kind of share with you this incredible, and I got a chance to meet this guy because he came to the seminary where I was studying for this sort of conference on preaching, and he actually preached this homily in the chapel. And I met him, and a friend of mine kind of knew him, introduced me to him. And this guy, Haddon Robinson, said to me, I'm sure he's told this joke many times before, he said, "Oh, Cale, you run with a rough crowd. You run with a rough crowd," kind of gesturing toward my friend. You run with a rough crowd, but that's okay. So did Jesus. So that's one you can use as well. At any rate, I'm sure he wouldn't mind me sharing this with you. He actually passed away in 2017 at the age of 86. May he rest in peace. And the title of his sermon, if you will, was "Don't Just Do Something, Sit There." Don't just do something, sit there. And it was all about Martha and Mary. And it was so cool. It was so cool. And he really kind of started off by talking, and I'm going to share some of this with you, and I'll intersperse my own thoughts as well. And he talked about how very often Jesus, you kind of wonder, how did Jesus spend his evenings after a long day of preaching, after weary hours of healing the crowds? Have you ever wondered? And it takes a lot out of you. When you give of yourself, it's tiring. It's absolutely tiring. And have you ever wondered what Jesus did when he was done his day? And Haddon Robinson said, well, sometimes people used to ask him about the fringe benefits, if you will, of following him. And Jesus said, hey, if you follow me, you should know this. Foxes have holes, birds of the air have nests, but the Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head. So there were probably... That's probably literally true in his case, that he probably had many nights where he was sleeping under the open sky as a canopy, a rock for a pillow. But there are other times when he was able to spend his evenings in the company of good friends. Yeah, we all need friendship. We are created for relationship. And that's true of Jesus as well. Jesus had friends, needed friends, like Mary, Martha, and their brother Lazarus in Bethany. And as the crowds, there was a time, of course, where people turned on Jesus just before his passion. And if you read John's gospel, by the way, you know that has something to do with this family, because really the last straw for the religious authorities of Jerusalem was when Lazarus was raised from the dead. They were like, that's it. If we let him go on like this, and if you read the gospel of John, the events following the raising of Lazarus in chapter 11, I'm paraphrasing here, but the authorities say something to the effect of, if we let him go on like this, everyone will believe in him. Well, that's kind of the point. That's kind of what God wants. But so they make these plans to take him out. And not only do they make plans to kill Jesus, but they also want to kill Lazarus. Can you imagine? Guys, I'm not in a hurry to do that again. I just died, all right? Can you give me a couple weeks just to get reacclimated here before you do it again? So even Lazarus, of course, might pay the ultimate price as a follower of Jesus. And that's part of the game, of course. That's part of the reality of being a disciple, is the possibility of martyrdom. And our brothers and sisters around the world do experience that to this day. And we know this. Think about all the attacks on churches around the world that have happened on high holy days, like Easter or Christmas. And so these are friends of Jesus. And Jesus could go to Bethany and Bethany is that place where he can be himself. He can be with them and just enjoy their friendship and be a friend to them. And so when you read this gospel, by the way, it's not just Jesus who came over to dinner, by the way, to Bethany, to the home of Mary, Martha, and Lazarus. All the disciples came as well. So there were 13, essentially there were 13 priests there, right? Our great high priest, Jesus, the God-man, and of course, 12 apostles. And I don't know if you've ever had a priest over for dinner, but sometimes it can be a wild experience because a lot of priests are very outgoing and they tell lots of stories. Well, imagine having 13 of them. And we used to do this, actually. My wife, Trish, and I used to do this. We would often have our priest friends over for dinner. And honestly, for them, it was kind of a way to blow off steam. And we knew that. We just kind of wind them up and let them go. They would sit there and just kind of tell stories to one another and maybe complain about parishioners, maybe not. No, they would never do that. But they would tell these stories. We called it Vatican III. It was like Vatican III at our house. It was just a lot of clerics. And we really enjoyed their company. So can you imagine Martha trying to cook? I know what it was like for my wife when that happened. I'm a terrible cook. I'm great at dialing numbers for DoorDash or whatever, but I'm terrible. I'm a one-figure cook, as they say. But yeah, it's tough to feed that many people. And some of you out there have big families and you do it with aplomb, you do it with ease, but you could kind of imagine what Martha was going through. And you know, Haddon Robinson said in his homily about this, in his sermon about this, he said, it's amazing how some cooks are just, they're just so, they can feed a big crowd. They can get the cold food in the fridge at the right time. They can get the hot food out of the stove at another time. It all comes out at the same time on the table and everybody has a good time. And that's a gift. That's a real gift. And hospitality is in fact a spiritual gift. You're listening to the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio, 888-914-9149. But because of this, because of all the stuff that she was doing, it maybe became a little bit overwhelming. Perhaps, maybe the meat got overdone a little bit. I don't know. Maybe there was smoke coming out of the oven, as it were. Not that they had ovens like we have today, but maybe it was a little bit overdone. Maybe it became a bit of a burnt offering for Jesus in a certain sense. And maybe she looked for her sister. Where is Mary? Where is she? And she looks in the living room and there she is sitting at Jesus' feet. And now she's ticked off. She's almost as hot as the dinner. She's as steaming as the burnt offering, if you will. She's like a volcano. And she just storms in there, walks up to Jesus and says, "Lord, don't you care that I have to get this meal together by myself? And why don't you just ask Mary to come and help me, or tell her to come and help me?" And you would maybe think, you know, maybe she was expecting that Jesus would say, "Yeah, man, what are you doing, Mary? Get in there and help her. Yeah, I can't believe you left her all alone and came in to live." But that's not what he says at all. That's not what he says at all. As you know, he says, "Hey, Mary has chosen the better part and it will not be taken away from her. You're worried and anxious about many things, Martha, but Mary has chosen the better part. It will not be taken away from her." And at some point, and this is what Haddon Robinson talked about in his famous sermon on this, he said, you know, he has a secret sympathy with Martha because he said, Martha's my kind of woman because she's realistic. She looks at life as it is, calls the shots as she sees them. And it's like when Lazarus dies in John chapter 11, Jesus was, in a sense, 4 days late for the funeral. He dies, and then he waits an extra 3 days to show up. And what does she say? "Lord, if you were here, my brother would not have died." That's a cold shot. And she's right in a certain sense, of course. And she doesn't necessarily get what he's trying to do there. And of course, he does raise him from the dead. He resuscitates him. And they're trying to roll away the stone. And maybe she's saying, "This is not a good idea. It's not going to smell very good." That's realism. That's realistic. And she's realistic enough to know that if you're going to get a dinner together for at least 14, 15, 16 people, somebody has to make it happen. Somebody's got to do it. And maybe Martha gets a bit of a the short end of the stick. If you read a lot of the devotional literature on this passage, everyone says, Mary, you know, you got to be like Mary, you got to be like Mary. But the stuff that Martha's doing is also important. It's also important. And I think in some ways, St. Jose Maria Escrivá, he used to say that we have to be contemplatives in the middle of the world. So we do have, these things need to be done. There is work that needs to be done. But I think we almost somehow have to combine those two personages in our own life. We have to be sort of a mix of Mary and Martha in a certain sense. So we have to do the work that needs to be done, but I think we have to do it while keeping our eyes on the Lord and keeping the Lord before us at all times. And there are times, though, that we do have to set aside that time to sit at his feet, and that's when we pray. And I think it's also really interesting, too, where this falls, where this passage falls in Luke's gospel, because we recently heard, and this was in the Mass readings as well from Luke over the last few days, the parable of the Good Samaritan. It's about being a good neighbor. And who's your neighbor? Basically, anybody who's in front of you who has a need, and you can meet that need. And that's exactly what Martha's doing. She's trying to meet the need. Jesus and his Mary men, if you will, right? They're, his apostles, they've been on the road. They've been helping a lot of people. They're tired. They're hungry. They need a good meal. She has the gift of hospitality. She wants to help them, and that's exactly what she does. And that's fantastic, to be able to meet other people's needs in that neighborly way, in that love in action. Love is an action verb. That's incredible. And Martha's probably the type of person who, if she found out that she had a neighbor who had a sick child, she would drop everything and spend time with that child so that the mother could take a rest. Or she would bring them a meal the mother wouldn't have to cook. And so that's what she's doing. She's trying to show hospitality to Jesus, the apostles, and really kind of set out before them a spread that they weren't going to forget. You know, Thanksgiving is coming up. Some of you can relate. It was probably something like a Thanksgiving dinner. That's how I see it in my mind. So why is Jesus kind of upbraiding her there then in a certain sense? And I think it's because of the way she was doing it. The way that it wasn't the service itself, but it was the spirit of the service, the way that she was doing it. And that's why Jesus says, hey, you are worried and anxious about many things. You're encumbered with your service. And that's the problem. You're worried. You're upset. You don't have the right spirit here. And she was probably, Martha was probably a type A personality. And we all know people like this. And sometimes they border on being an obsessive compulsive person, right? And what happens is that people who think that way, they usually have this kind of life verse. If something's worth doing, it's worth doing well, maybe even perfectly. If something's worth doing, it's worth doing perfectly. And this can be a problem. And, you know, Haddon Robinson talked about this attitude in his sermon. He said that motto has murdered as many people as it's motivated. If something's worth doing, it's worth doing well. That can lead to a lot of problems. Now, there's no denying that we have to do things as well as we possibly can, but we also have to understand that there are limits. How well can we possibly do certain things given our other responsibilities? And so this idea that maybe you just need to have like one good plate of food. That's great. Maybe it's even sandwiches or something, but one meal prepared with love might be better than a lot of stress over this lavish meal where you're cleaning the house before a company comes over as though there's going to be an operation in the living room. Someone's going to come with a white glove and check the dust along the door frame, and there's going to be an inspection. So This is a problem. And sometimes we stress ourselves out trying to do a lot of different things and trying to do them all perfectly. And it's just not possible. Let's say you're a student, and let's say you're also, I went to school with a lot of people like this who are doing their master's degrees, but they had a family to support, and they're working as well full-time, and they're trying to go to school part-time or maybe even full-time as well. It's unrealistic maybe to expect that you can get A pluses in all the courses that you're taking, but maybe you can. There's no shame in getting a B+. If that's the best you can do, given your circumstances, that's okay. That's okay. And I think that's why G.K. Chesterton came up with this line. Hey, if something's worth doing, it's worth doing poorly, which is, it's kind of an antidote to this perfectionism that we have. Maybe it's worth doing simply. Do it well, do it simply. And I do think, though, that getting back to the whole person of Mary, we really, really have to get back to the prayer life. And that's what can happen sometimes when we get overly busy. We don't have time to sit at the feet of Jesus. So I just think that this is so crucial. It's so important. And so at the end of this homily, I'll close it with this. This was an incredible story, and it was just such a good illustration of what I think Jesus was trying to say here. And Haddon Robinson told the story about a mother and her son who lived in Chicago during just after the period of World War II. Okay, this is pre-internet, pre-smartphone. What did people often do? They would just kind of, you know, in the evenings, they would spend time with family and friends. They would maybe listen to music, read, talk to one another. Imagine that. And that's essentially what happened with this mother and her son. The father had passed away when the boy was young. And so she became a single mom, brought him up. And then he met a girl, fell in love, and they got married. And it was very, very difficult to, just like it is today, it was very difficult for young couples to buy a home back in those post-war years, to be able to afford a home. And so the mother said, hey, son, why don't you and your wife, she sort of owned this duplex, and she said, why don't you move into the bottom floor, and I'll live on the top floor, and you can live there with your wife, and hopefully you'll have some kids, but the only thing I ask is that you come to visit me. And he said, of course, Mom, I will. And so he would visit once or twice a week, and they would sit just like they used to do and listen to music, read books together, enjoy each other's company. But as time went on, as life got more busy, the son didn't come up as often, didn't visit very often at all. They would become more like once a month visits. And then it became time for the mother's birthday. And so the son brings her this beautiful present, and she opens it, and it's a new dress, and it's just gorgeous. And she said, oh, thank you so much, son. I love it. But he could tell something was off in her voice. He said, Mom, what's wrong? If it doesn't fit, if you don't like the color, no, it's my favorite color. I've got the receipt. I can give it back. They said I could take it back. No, it's not that. And so she gestures to her closet, and she opens it up for him, and she says, my son, I have many, many dresses, as you can see. I've got a whole wardrobe full of them. What I want is not this. I don't want yours as much as I want you. I don't want yours as much as I want you. And I think that's exactly what Jesus is saying here to us through this gospel, that through all of your busyness, we really, really need to simplify life and get these relationships right, starting with God, and then others and ourselves as well. Love God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. You've got to get those relationships right. Simplify it. Spend some time with the Lord, because ultimately, he doesn't want yours as much as he wants you. Got to take a quick break on the Cale Clark Show. We'll be right back. 888-914-9149. Hi, this is Cale Clark. Thanks for listening to my podcast. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. They're a pro-life phone company, and 5% of your monthly plan price goes to Relevant Radio or another pro-life charity of your choice. For a limited time, new customers who mention offer code Relevant Radio get a free phone with free activation and free shipping. Don't delay. CharityMobile.com. That's CharityMobile.com. The Relevant Radio studio line is sponsored by the Catholic Order of Foresters Flexible Premium Life Insurance. For less than $12 a month, a 40-year-old can get $500,000 of coverage. Go to relevantradio.com/forester today An Illinois Life Insurance Society, not available in all states.
Explaining the Catholic faith and how you can live it and share it too. It's Cale Clark on Relevant Radio.
Hey, welcome back to the show. 888-914-9149 is the number to call. Studio line to talk to me. If you want to react to anything that you've just heard on the program, you can also, of course, follow me on Twitter. You can tweet at me at Cale Clark, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E. And of course, today is the feast day of St. Francis of Assisi. Before we get into that, I want to tell you about someone else who passed away yesterday, Father Joe Soria, who you probably never heard of. He was a priest who passed away at the age of 90. He was originally from Spain, but he passed away at the age of 90 in Vancouver yesterday. And this guy was a living saint. Now, hopefully we're all living saints. Hopefully that can be said about us. But from time to time, you meet people who just exude holiness. And this guy really was a living saint. Now, he was a priest of Opus Dei, just like Father Rocky. And he went really back to the beginning. In fact, before he became a priest, he was actually a physician, and he was the personal physician of Saint Jose Maria Escrivá, who founded Opus Dei. And in fact, when Saint Jose Maria died, Father Joe was there. Now, he was a doctor at that point. He was Dr. Joe. And he actually closed Saint Jose Maria's eyes when he died. Now, he eventually became a priest, and he eventually came to Canada. And he actually was the chaplain at the high school that my wife attended growing up. And I had heard so many legendary stories about this guy. And he actually, he once wrote a book about, I think it was called The Master of Good Humor. He wrote a book called The Master of Good, it was all about the humor of St. Jose Maria, but it was in Spanish. And he never translated it because it's like, well, humor doesn't translate very well into different languages. You lose the nuances. And that was definitely the case here. And at any rate, he wrote another book that St. Jose Maria had basically told him, I want you to write this book. I want you to write this book. So he commissioned him to write this book. And one time my wife, when she was in high school, she asked him, well, what have I told you to write a book? I'd like you to write a book about this. And he looked at her and he said, well, no, I can't do it. Well, why not? St. Jose Maria told you to write a book. What if I tell you to write a book? And he said, well, no, because you're not a saint. He was a saint. He told so. And it's like, oh, you know, there's kind of a barb there, but there's a bit of truth there, right? You're a saint in you're not a saint yet, is probably what he should have said. I think she's definitely gaining in sanctity by being married to me, putting up with all my foibles. But anyway, so a few years ago, I think when he was about 4 years ago, he was about 86 years old at the time. He was back in the Toronto area. And my wife said, look, he's speaking at this thing. It's about the family. There'll be a lot of people that I used to go to school with who will be there who want to see him. This might be the last chance that we ever have to see Father Joe Soria again. So I went. I was very eager to meet this guy. And it was just amazing because when my wife and all her classmates from high school, when they saw this guy, they just started weeping, like openly weeping. They gave him a big hug and they were just all crying. They were just in tears because he had touched their hearts so powerfully when he was their chaplain. They had gone to confession with him and spiritual direction. And it just was really quite impressive. And sometime later, I actually went on a retreat. And I happened to find in the library at the retreat house I was staying at another book that he wrote. And I can't remember the name of it. I wish I could. But another book that was written by Father Joe Soria, who just passed away, may he rest in peace, at the age of 90 yesterday. And this was like a watershed moment for me. Sometimes when you find the right book at the right time, it just changes your life. And that was what happened to me, because he said he just exhibited a lot of pastoral wisdom. And as I said off the top of the show, sometimes I have a tendency towards perfectionism and scrupulosity, and I tend to dwell on mistakes. Even if I've confessed them and been forgiven for them, mistakes that I've made in my life. And what if I had done this instead? Or what if I hadn't done that? That was so boneheaded. I can't believe I did this. Why, if I had only taken another approach, things would have went better. And that's not realistic, number one, because we are human. We're gonna make mistakes. It's just part of the process. But St. Jose Maria used to he didn't have very much patience for people who thought like that. He called it mystical wishful thinking. There are a lot of people who walk around and they say, oh, I wish, what if I hadn't got married? Or what if I did get married? Or what if I had gone into the religious life? Or what if I'd become a priest? Or what if I'd done this? Or what if I'd done that? Or what if I hadn't done this? Nonsense. He called it mystical wishful thinking. You've got to get back to the reality that you're in now, the here and now, because that's where you'll find God, in the present moment. If you don't find him in the present moment, you're never going to find him at all. So I found this book that was written by Father Joe Soria. And it was just so amazing. And he talked about that. He said something to the effect, and I'm paraphrasing here, but something to the effect of, you know, a lot of people, they kick themselves for the mistakes that they made and choices that they made years ago. So for example, let's say you're 50 years old and you're saying, man, when I was 25, I wish I hadn't done this, or I wish I hadn't taken this job or whatever. He said, well, first of all, of course you wouldn't do the same thing now, because now you're 50 instead of 25. And if you're still making the same choices as a 50-year-old that you were making when you were 25, then you just wasted the last 25 years of your life. I mean, he didn't say it quite like that, but we're a totally different person now, because you're older, number one, you're more mature, hopefully, although that's not necessarily the case. There are plenty of 50-year-olds who are not as mature as a lot of 25-year-olds, but hopefully we're spiritually better. Hopefully we're better disciples of Jesus Christ. So as we go along, of course you wouldn't make the same choice about X, whatever that was, at 50 that you did when you were 25. But here's the thing. God knew you were going to do that. God knew you were going to make that choice. Why? Because he's all seeing. He's factored that in. Here's the thing. He factored that into his plan for you. Because he's the ultimate chess master. He's you can't get yourself so far out of God's will that, you know, you completely messed it up. He knew you were going to do that, because based on who you are at that time, who you were when you were, say, 25, who your parents were, who your friends were, where you went to school, your influences, your upbringing, where you were at spiritually, maybe you were catechized, maybe you had good formation in the faith, maybe you didn't. All of that stuff, your intellect, your capabilities, everything factors in. So when you made that choice back then, whatever that was, not only did God know that you were going to do that, but number two, that's really the only choice you would have made, the only choice you could have made, given who you were at that time. God knew you were going to do that. It's almost like with a little kid and they're sort of playing near a hot stove. You know what they're going to do. You know they're going to try to touch the burner, because this is what kids do. You don't have to be a genius to figure this out. So of course, God knows that we're going to make, he foresees the foolish choices that we're going to make at times. And he uses this to get us to where we need to be in the future. He never gives up on us. I can't remember the name of the song. I think it's called God Bless the Broken Road. There's this country music song that talks about God bless the broken road that led me straight to you. And it's a love song, but essentially this guy is saying all the choices, the bad relationships he was in, the breakups, all that stuff led to him meeting the love of his life. And if he hadn't made all those bad choices back then, in a certain way, not that they were good things, but he wouldn't have got to that point where he was in the position to meet the one. Okay, so I just thought, wow, I read this and I thought, that is so spiritually freeing. It's just unbelievable. So Father Joe Soria, may he rest in peace. Please pray for the repose of his soul. Although, you know, I'm no ecclesial authority, that's for sure. But you'll probably be praying for us, you know, in heaven. I'm sure that his experience of purgatory will be short, Lord willing, and if there even is one. But a very, very holy priest, Father Joe. Sorry, so I just wanted to mention that. He was amazing. All right, so today, of course, also, and by the way, you can call in 888-914-9149. You're listening to the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. Let's go to the phones right now. Mary is in Elk Grove, California on the line. Hi, Mary.
Hi.
Hello. Welcome to the program. Thanks for calling in.
Okay.
What are your thoughts? What's
Thank
on
you.
Your mind?
Can I go ahead and say? I heard, I just had turned on the radio and I was listening to I don't know who the gentleman was, but he was talking about Mary and Martha. And it seemed like he was making excuses for Martha. And I, you know, he didn't say definitely. He said maybe. But I would never do that because God comes first. Always. Jesus is number one. And I just think that, you know, we should always remember that, that we wouldn't even be here if Jesus had not came down from heaven and went to that old rugged cross and died for our sins.
Absolutely, yes. Mary. That's amazing. Thank you for calling in. And yeah, the gentleman, well, that's very kind of you to call me a gentleman. That was, in fact, me who said that. And you're absolutely right. And I'm glad that you would never do that. You would always put Jesus first. That's what we all ought to do. And that's how we find joy in life. This is the great commandment, first of all. Love God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. And one other, I don't know who said this originally, but it's a common preacher's line. This is how you find joy. Jesus first, others second, yourself last. And you can't forget about yourself. You have to love yourself as well. You have to put on your own oxygen mask, in a sense, before you can help others. But that spells joy. Jesus first, others second, yourself last. And that's exactly how to do it. You have to put God first. Absolutely. All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about St. Francis. Thank you for that call, Mary, in Elk Grove, California. Let's talk about St. Francis of Assisi. Of course, it is his feast day today. And I did get to go to Assisi when I was, I've only been to Italy one time on our honeymoon. Patricia and I went to Rome for our honeymoon, and we did do one little side trip to Assisi. And that was an incredible experience because we ran into, Assisi is really cool. If you get a chance to go, it's not very big, but it's definitely worth the trip. It's really amazing. And we just by pure providence, we ran into this American priest who was giving some people a tour, and he invited us to come along. And this guy was super knowledgeable. And unfortunately, I've lost touch with this guy. He called himself Padre Cisco. That was his last name, Cisco. So, and as it turns out, he did his PhD, he did his doctorate. And I said, well, what was your thesis about? Everybody who does their PhD has to write a little book, essentially, or a big book called a thesis. And I said, what was it about? And he said, my thesis was about all the sermons or the homilies that were preached, speaking about homilies, all the sermons that were preached in Mexico after the appearance of Our Lady of Guadalupe. During that period when the Catholic faith went from 0 to 100, right? There were hardly any converts to Catholicism before the appearance of Our Lady of Guadalupe in Mexico in the 16th century. And almost overnight, within about 7 years, about 10 million Mexicans converted to Catholicism. And his thesis was all about the sermons that were preached during that time. Man, I would love to read some of those. That's amazing. But anyways, so he took us around and showed us some sites in Assisi that were crucial to the life of St. Francis. And it was a lot of fun. And it was really interesting, too, about St. Francis. Now, he grew up, obviously, a child of privilege, and most of you know his background. His father was quite wealthy merchant, but they say about him that on one particular day, his friends came up to Francis, and they noticed that he was really, really happy. And that always stands out when someone is really happy. People want to know, why are you so happy? What makes you tick? And it's a great way to share with them the joy of the gospel, right? Speaking of the joy of the gospel, but they asked him why he was so happy, and he said, because I got married. I bet you didn't know Francis of Assisi was married. Well, not really. So he said, because I have married. And they're like, well, who did you get married to? We haven't heard about this. He said, I've married Lady Poverty. I've married Lady Poverty. And basically, he had given to the poor everything that he had. He got into a lot of trouble because eventually his parents found out about this. Anytime his parents gave him cash or gave him the family credit card, he immediately started buying things for other people. He gave it all away, and he would dress in rags And he would just talk about how the beauty of the spirit of poverty to anybody who would listen. And he would do things like rebuild an abandoned chapel, hang out in nature. We know about this. And eventually his father thought he'd just lost it. His father actually kind of put him under house arrest, put him in a cellar, and basically called in the church authorities. And the bishop actually said, hey, listen, Francis, if you're not going to use your family's resources wisely, you should just give them up. You should just give them up. So he's like, okay. And he essentially, at that point, he said, I renounce my inheritance. And he, you know, the famous story, he actually gave to his father the very clothes he was wearing, took them all off and said, here you go. And he ran off into the woods naked, where he lived as a hermit. But then something happened to him when he was camping out in the woods that really changed the world. Now, I'm going to tell you about that on the other side of the break. You're listening to The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio, 888-914-9149. Be right back. The Catholic Order of Foresters, the sponsor of our studio's line, is hiring today. Several positions are available throughout the United States. Visit relevantradio.com/forester to learn more about how you can find your vocation with Catholic Order of Foresters, an Illinois life insurance society, not licensed in all states.
Explaining the Catholic faith and how you can live it and share it too. It's The Cale Clark Show. Have a question? Give Cale a call at 888-914-9149.
Yeah, that is the number, 888-914-9149. It's a feast day of St. Francis of Assisi. Favorite saint of a lot of people, that is for sure. And of course, Pope Francis was the first pope ever to take his name as a papal name. But there's another pope who actually helped out St. Francis a lot when he got going. Just before the break, I told you about how he literally gave the clothes off his back to his dad, said, I'm renouncing my inheritance and all the family wealth, and I'm going to go live in the woods. And that's essentially what he did. He basically became a hermit. And then in the year 1209, here's what happened. And this is why it's really important to go to Mass, folks, because in 1209, he was at Mass and he heard the reading of the gospel from Matthew chapter 10. And this is the chapter where Jesus sends out his disciples, he sends out the 70 to preach. He says, hey, listen, take no gold, no silver, no bags, just rely on God's providence. And that really spoke to Francis. And at that point, he'd sort of embraced the spirit of poverty, voluntary poverty. He'd found a lot of joy in it, just being detached from everything. And he's like, you know what? There's something missing here. I'm getting a lot out of this, but what about other people? So that's where he kind of made the connection of not only living poverty, but connecting it with preaching. So he's like, I'm not going to live in the woods by myself anymore, but I'm going to go back to the very heart of the city. I'm going to go back to Assisi, where the people are, and I'm going to preach to them. I'm going to help the poor. I'm going to help the sick, and I'm going to identify with them, with everybody else who is suffering. And so that's what he did. He went back into town, and all of his former friends who were like the in crowd in the local Assisi high school, if you will, they thought he'd completely lost his marbles. They started making fun of him, insulting him. But eventually his way of life caught on, and a lot of people started gathering around him, and this community started to form. And so he went to Rome along with a few others, and he tried to get, hey, I want my little community to get papal verification. We want the papal stamp of approval. And so the Pope at that time was Pope Innocent III, Pope Innocent III. And that's kind of a cool name. I think future Pope should, I'm totally innocent here, should take that name. It's cool. It's cool. So Pope Innocent III, who was actually one of the best popes of all time, he was very, very wise. He looked at Francis, he's like, I don't know about this guy. And at first he was like, I really don't want to give them the stamp of approval to start this new community. But eventually he kind of saw that Francis was legit, and he really was the real deal. And he said, okay, I'm gonna give you permission to start the Franciscan community. So he started what was called the Order of Lesser Brothers, or Friars Minor. And then, of course, there was St. Clare, who was his spiritual sister. She founded the Poor Clares, the female counterpart, if you will, to St. Francis. And then these mendicant orders, they were preaching, singing, begging all across Europe. They just spread like wildfire. But Francis was always afraid that the very success of the movement could be its biggest Achilles heel. And so as his community, as the Franciscans began to spread across Europe and become very successful and get a lot of followers, he was getting more and more nervous because he was afraid that they would lose their humility, their humility. And so one time there's a story that was told about him that when one of the Franciscan novices asked him, "Is it okay if I own my own Psalter, my own copy of the Psalms?" And he was like, "You know, in community, everything belongs to everybody else. And can I have my own copy of the Psalter?" And he said, "Well, I don't really think so, because here's the thing. If you get one of the Psalters, the next thing is you're going to want your own breviary, which is a book of prayer of the church that you know, priests and deacons and bishops have to pray it every day, and many lay people do as well. So once you get a Psalter," he said, "you're going to want a breviary. And once you get a breviary, you're going to want to climb up into the pulpit and preach like a bishop." So it really never ends. This wanting for stuff, even when you're living the spirit of poverty, even when you've taken a vow of poverty in a religious community. And so that was what he was really worried about, the temptations that success would bring to the table. So he, in his will, in his last will and testament, he actually forbade all of his followers to possess anything. And he said, "You're not allowed to go to the Pope or anybody else to try to rescind this rule. You're not allowed to change it to make it more lax." And he lived it himself too. In the year 1220, he gave up leadership of the Franciscan order and he knelt in obedience before his own successor. And he died on October the 3rd. Some people say it was today, October the 4th. There's some dispute about that, in 1226. And he died in the chapel that he had rebuilt when he was young. And his last words apparently were, "I have done my duty. Now may Christ let you know yours. Welcome, Sister Death. Welcome, Sister Death." So not bad. That's some pretty, and obviously he was the first person that we know of in church history who received the stigmata. We could talk about that. And yeah, so there, St. Francis of Assisi, pray for us. There is so much that we can learn from him and from his piety. All right, let's go to the phones right now. Dee Dee is calling from Phoenix. Welcome back, Dee Dee. How are you?
Hi, Cale.
Hey.
How are you?
It's been a while. It's been a few days since you called in.
Just listening to you, I'm reminded of something that G.K. Chesterton once said. You know what he said? He said, even if you don't do something perfectly, do it.
Mm-hmm.
Because God will teach you something.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. Yeah, and thank you for calling, Dee Dee. And yeah, Chesterton is ever so quotable. He would have been great on Twitter. There's even a few Twitter accounts that are, you know, just dedicated to Chesterton quotes. He's perfect for that medium. Yeah, and that was sort of the antidote that he gave. If something's worth doing, it's worth doing poorly, because this idea of if something's worth doing, it's worth doing well. Those of us who tend towards perfectionism, we don't even want to start something because unless I can do it perfectly, I don't want to do it because I just don't want to give a bad offering, if you will. And so no, it's better to do something than nothing. That's certainly the case. And Chesterton knew that full well. Thank you for that call, Dee Dee. Let's go now to Joe, who's calling from somewhere in the Midwest. Hi, Joe.
Hi, Joe. Hi, Cale. How are you?
I'm great. Great. Thanks for calling in.
Good. Yeah, see, I caught the tail end of your previous segment, and you were talking about how God knew the mistakes we would make, given our family situation and our friends and all that stuff, when we were like 25. Yeah. Well, looking back on that several decades later, yes, that's all great, but how does it factor in? I mean, sometimes some of those decisions, mistakes, hurt ourselves or hurt others.
Yeah.
And how does that factor in? I mean, yeah, it's all good. It's all part of God's divine providence to get us where we need to go, but I mean, sometimes those have consequences, and how does that all, you know, what would your thoughts be on that, you know?
Yeah, that's very true, and that's really where the concept of penance comes in at some level. Every time we go to confession, of course, when the priest gives us absolution, the eternal guilt, you know, the eternal consequences of the sin are forgiven. If it's a mortal sin, you know, separation from God, that's, we're back in friendship there. But every time we commit a sin, there's a woundedness in us. The heart has been wounded, and we're never quite the same. And so we need to kind of heal those wounds. And I really do think this is a big part of what purgatory is all about. It's about healing those wounds, those holes in our heart, if you will. And so I think that's part of the reason why we can make good use of the time we have left to do penance. To Understand, yes, that God has forgiven us. We don't need to keep beating ourselves up about that, but an opportunity to get better and an opportunity to, I think also when we make mistakes like of various sorts, they can actually, it can be helpful. God can bring a lot of good out of it. One of the good things that can happen is that we become much more, I think, patient with the faults of others. That's one thing that can happen, especially if it's something that we've struggled with and it's an area that we've had battled temptations and maybe lost in. We can understand the struggles that others are going through and we can help them. I really do think it's true that God never wastes an experience, good or bad. He can always use that to shape us and help us to shape others. And I think that's one thing. And also just to be able to extend and receive forgiveness. To, if possible, apologize personally to people we may have hurt in the past, if we're able to track them down, to just show grace to others, to be more forgiving to others. That parable of the unmerciful servant comes to mind. You know, he's forgiven a debt of millions of dollars, let's say. He doesn't even have to pay it back. It just gets wiped off the slate. And then he won't forgive his friend who owes him $10. I mean, give me a break. So we have to understand what God has done for us. And some stray thoughts, Joe. I don't know if it's helpful or not, but thank you so much for calling in. I just want to remind everybody, Tim Reese coming up next, and then the Family Rosary Across America. It is October. It's the month of the Rosary. What a great chance to join the Relevant Radio family to pray in this fun and interactive environment with Father Rocky. Have your prayer requests heard. And by the way, if you can't catch it on Relevant Radio, you can also catch a video stream on Facebook and Twitter as well and share it with your friends. Jim Shaper produced. Patrick Aluck took your phone calls. It's been the Cale Clark Show. See you tomorrow. Take it away, Michaela.
Thank you for listening to my daddy.